Krishna, le le, Anandamma, Krishna, 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 le le, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, le le. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. Nitya Gauri Bhava, Hari Bhava, Hari Bhava, Nitya Gauri Bhava. Nitai Guru Premanandi, Srila Prabhupada ki, Ganta Chimpan Bhagavatam ki, Sama Veda Bhaktivinoda ki, Guru Premanandi, Hare Krishna. Just leave me the Bhagavatam, or that goes underneath. Oh, okay, good, 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 good. Just getting to know the system. Thank you. Om Akyantamandasya Gyananjala Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Dina Tasmai Shri Guve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manupistam Stabinam Yanuvuttale Svayam Rupakaramayam Dadati Svavanatikam Namam Vishnabhadaya Kishabhista Vuttale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sasvati Deve Gauravani Pichayine Nivishisha Shunyavari Pashtadada Shatadene Vanchakapa Tuvisha Kripa Sanivevacha Padittanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shri Vasadi Govaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So to begin with, maybe may I ask those who sit on the floor to come a little closer? I am a personalist and I like to, you know, connect a little bit with the devotees when I speak, have some eye contact. So you all are sitting very far away. Okay. Yeah, so first of all, let me begin by expressing my joy and great honor I feel to be here. It's not the first time I'm visiting Alachua. I came once 6 years ago, just before the pandemic, 2019. And yes, I dare say your community is famous all around the world of ISKCON. And I dare say in no other community do we find as many senior devotees and Prabhupada disciples as here. So yeah, it's a great pleasure for me to be allowed to visit. And yeah, I also have to comment on your beautiful deity worship, you know, yes. When I look at the deities here, I do remember hearing Prabhupada making, or not me personally hearing, but reading, how Prabhupada was making this comment, whoever dressed the deities this morning must have been personally inspired by the Lord himself. So I kind of remember hearing or reading this when I look at your beautiful deities. Very amazing. Yes. So yes, and to begin with, let me ask for the blessings of all the Vaishnavas assembled, especially all the senior devotees, Prabhupada disciples. I feel a little awkward sitting here and you know, because I'm not so senior, and so please give me your blessings that I can say something which makes a little sense and is of some little inspiration. Maybe also, you know, I was introduced, I think you read the back of the brochure, right? Yeah. Because very often devotees ask me, so where are you from? So it is indeed like that, that practically every week, every weekend, I'm in a different place. So I do live out of a suitcase, actually. I have never lived in Germany as a devotee, even though that's my nationality. And yeah, Mayapur is really the only place where I stay longer than 2 weeks. I spend 3 months per year in Mayapur every year. And I'm giving all different courses there. As you may have heard, I have established a little institute for spiritual culture. And at this point, I also do want to express my gratitude to Shesha Prabhu, because he immensely supported me and inspired me and encouraged me in my humble journey there. So yes, I always remember that and feel great gratitude towards your good self and your good wife. So yeah, and these courses I'm teaching every year in Mayapur, basically because I have been very involved in preaching in Bangladesh over more than 20 years. In fact, for some years I was even serving as the vice president in Dhaka Temple, a temple of 150 brahmacharis and bhaktas. I was like the mother there. Yes. So, and yeah, I mean, I think we all know that Bangladesh had a few turbulences there last year. So last year I couldn't go. But usually I go every year, not as much as I used to be there. But it is a very amazing place where we can actually experience the sweetness and beauty of Krishna's culture. Yeah. And I have received quite a bit of a transformation there over 20 years of spending some time there. Because when I'm there, I'm only with the locals. There's no Western devotees living there. So I'm living with them, I'm preaching with them, I'm eating with them, I'm traveling with them all around Bangladesh. So, and you learn quite a bit from them. Yes. So, and that gave me the realization that actually, you know, learning our, studying Prabhupada's books, learning the philosophy, this is step number one. But then comes the main challenge. How do we live it? And we need a little bit of training and education in this if we want to be open for this. And that's why I thought, okay, let me establish this Institute for Spiritual Culture. Let me put some systematic courses together. And I've been teaching them in Mayapur every year for 12-14 years, something like that. So, and now I'm making these courses available in book form, so it can reach more people. That was Prabhupada's formula. The books are the basis. So yeah, that's kind of my humble attempt. So I'm trying to make Prabhupada's teachings more practically accessible for us, for those who actually aspire to really live them, you know. And I dare say, only if we actually live what Prabhupada has given us, then we do receive that transformation which bhakti is meant to bring about, because we are meant to transform our tastes and likes and worldviews and dislikes and patterns of behaviors and our very heart, ultimately, to actually create a suitable place in the heart for cultivating bhakti. So, and I dare say this transformation takes really place according to how much we live what Prabhupada has given us. So these are my humble realizations and thoughts, you know, which I wanted to share with you. Yes, so let us turn to the Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Canto 3, Chapter 14, verse 37 and 38, because 37 has no purport. So how do you usually do it? Do you as I like? So let me just maybe once read through the 37 verse, the Sanskrit and the translation, and then the 38 we can chant in response. Maitreya Uvacha. That was the automatic response, was it? Yes. Shall I just once change it through? And otherwise, I'm afraid the time is running through my hands here. Maitreya Uvacha. Svasagasya shisam lokyam asasanam pave patim nivitta sanyaniyamo paya aha pajapati. Translation. Maitreya said, the great sage Kasyapa thus addressed his wife, who was trembling because of fear that her husband was offended. She understood that he had been dissuaded from his daily duties of offering evening prayers, yet she desired the welfare of her children in the world. And text number 38. So there we chant responsively. Kasyapa uvacha. Aprayatyat atmanaste. No shan mo hoti kat uta. Manide shati charena. Devanam chati helanat. Apayatyat atmanaste. Doshan mauhutikat uta. Manide shatitarena. Devanam chati helanat. Somebody chant. Vaishnavis. Vaishnavis. Kasyapa Uvacha, the learned Brahmana Kasyapa said, Aprayatyat, because of the pollution, Atmanaha, of the mind, Te, your Dushat, because of defilement, Mahotikat, in terms of the moment, Uta, also, Mat, my, Nidesha, direction, Aticharena, being too neglectful, Devanam, of the demigods, Cha, also, Atihelanat, being too apathetic. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The learned Kasyapa said, because of you minds being polluted, because of defilement of the particular time, because of you negligence of my directions, and because of you being apathetic to the demigods, everything was inauspicious. And the purport by Srila Prabhupada. The conditions for having good progeny in society are that the husband should be disciplined in religious and regulative principles, and the wife should be faithful to the husband. In Bhagavad Gita 7.11, it is said that sexual intercourse according to religious principles is a representation of Krishna consciousness. Before engaging in sexual intercourse, both the husband and the wife must consider their mental condition, the particular time, the husband's direction, and obedience to the demigods. According to Vedic society, there is a suitable, auspicious time for sex life, which is called the time for Garbhadhan. Diti neglected all the principles of scriptural injunction. And therefore, although she was very anxious for auspicious children, she was informed that her children would not be worthy to be the sons of a Brahmana. There is a clear indication here that a Brahmana's son is not always a Brahmana. Personalities like Ravana and Hiranyakashipu were actually born of Brahmanas, but they were not accepted as Brahmanas because their fathers did not follow the regulative principles for their birth. Such children are called demons or Rakshasas. There were only one or two Rakshasas in the previous ages due to negligence of the disciplinary methods. But during the age of Kali, there is no discipline in sex life. How then can one expect good children? Certainly, unwanted children cannot be a source of happiness in society. But through the Krishna consciousness movement, they can be raised to the human standard by chanting the holy name of God. That is the unique contribution of Lord Chaitanya to human society. Yes. So, I'm sure you must have discussed the whole topic in all detail over quite a few weeks now. And I must admit, when I was reading the verse in purport, I was tempted to just focus on Prabhupada's last statement. taking the easy way out. But then I thought, no, let me share, let me try and say a few little words about this whole topic of Gabadan and children. Because in Mayapur, I do give a 15-hour course on children, and it starts with Gabadan Samskara. And the course is entitled, Our Children Are Our Future. That's the only course which I haven't put in book form yet, but it will come hopefully next year. I'm going to sit down and put that together. Yeah, so, and I kind of thought it was interesting how Prabhupada in the purport, in one sense, he speaks so strongly, saying, well, if there's no discipline in sex life, how can we expect good children? You know, quite strong words. But then he balances it and says, well, but by the chanting of the holy name, we can raise them, you know, to human standard of life. And that's the special gift that Mahaprabhu gave. So I thought it was very sweet and amazing how Prabhupada balanced the things. And he gives us a little bit of hope that it's not all lost, even if we may have not performed Gabadan Samskara when we were conceiving our children and so on. You know. But yeah, I feel that, yes, let me say a few things, because we certainly should not use Prabhupada's statement, you know, the last sentence, as an excuse to say, oh, well, just see. We don't need all this Gabadan Samskara and all that. Why bothering, you know? But no, I don't think this is what Prabhupada wants to say, because there are many strong statements throughout the whole Bhagavatam on this topic of Gabadan, you know. So obviously, I dare say Prabhupada is expecting us sooner or later to come up to the standards and actually practice what he is giving us. Because after all, we all know Prabhupada's books are the law books for the next 10,000 years. So why would he waste his time, you know, explaining all these things in details if he would not expect us to actually eventually lift these things? And it certainly will most likely take several generations. From generation to generation, we may get closer to living what Prabhupada is actually giving us, you know. But yeah, it is not widely understood, the importance of Gabadan Samskara. And even the general topic of samskaras. It took me quite a while too. I always thought these samskaras, it's just some social thing to move the kids into the center, right? There's quite a few samskaras we can do when during pregnancy and then when the child is born. And so for many years, I did not put much attention to this topic, you know. But then one day I realized this is so much more than just some social thing or something, you know. Yes, and also we may have heard the statement that the advancement of a society can be measured in how much they do for their children. And I dare say, yeah, we still have quite a bit of room for improvement on this topic. And although I have to say, I certainly can see that here in Alachua you are doing quite a bit for your children. I remember 6 years ago when I visited, I was taken for a little tour in the school here. And I was very impressed, actually. I could sense the atmosphere, you know, that the kids are happy to be there. And they were taught the culture of respect, you know. I was quite impressed. I remember when I came, some girls received me with a glass of water, and I thought, wow, amazing, you know, this is taught to the kids here, you know, amazing, in America, you know, so, yeah, I was quite impressed, you know, and I was happy to see all the kids yesterday coming and so on, you know. Yes, but this is not everywhere, you know. I observe all these things. I mean, I'm traveling pretty widely these days, so many more countries than what was mentioned in my introduction there. So, and yeah, many temples, they have zero children's programs. There's nothing for them, nothing. Yes, it's a burning topic, you know, yes. So yeah, and let me maybe share how my interest got sparked up in the topic of children, because I don't have my own physical children, even though I was married for 10 years, but it just never happened. I guess we were just too busy with so many other things. So Krishna didn't arrange, even though we did not try to avoid having children or something. But yeah, it simply didn't happen. But yeah, so for many years, the children were not so much in the focus for me, you know. But then again, in Bangladesh, that's where I learned things, you know. And I want to share with you one episode which was quite mind-blowing to me. This is about 15, 18 years ago. I took one mother with her 10-year-old son to Bangladesh. She really wanted to come with me, and her son was there, and we discussed, should he stay with the father and go back to their home country, or should he come along? So we decided, all right, let him come along. And this child was almost like a classic Kali Yuga kid, bored out of his brains, didn't want to go to the temple, was just sitting, playing computer games, you know, yeah. And he was known not to be a devotee. And when people heard, I'm taking him to Bangladesh, they actually came up to me, it was in Mayapur, and they said, why do you take him to Bangladesh? He's not even a devotee. Yeah. So, but then, in Bangladesh, this boy came to life. My God. He was flourishing. Why? Because the devotees gave him so much attention and affection. Yeah. You know, the man really included him in the preaching. He knew one tune on the harmonium. On every preaching program, he had his little number there where he was allowed to sing and play harmonium. And when he finished his singing, he was holding the mic for the preachers there. And you know, they all bought him cloth, Swami hat, and this and that. I mean, he probably received more affection and attention in these 3 weeks of Bangladesh than he had ever received before. And he was flying in ecstasy. He was coming for every Mangalati. He accepted one of the brahmacharis as his shiksha guru, washing his cloth every day. So, and then this brahmachari said to him, you should read Bhagavad Gita every day. He was sitting there reading Bhagavad Gita every day. I mean, his mother was in shock. She was blown away. What happened to my son? You know, yes, yes. And that was the eye-opener for me, that I thought, my God, there is something lacking here in the Western world, if I may say so. You know, yes, we are doing something wrong. You know, before he was known as not being a devotee, already labeling a kid like that is terrible, actually, you know. But yeah, and that really caught my interest, you know. And then also Many years ago when I started visiting Bangladesh, my right-hand man, he was at that time 26 years old, brahmachari. He was once saying to me, you know, our children's programs are more important than our university preaching. And I was impressed, okay, how is that? Why? And then he said, yes, child, that's where we have to plant the seeds of bhakti. You know, the child, his character, his habits, you can form. Once a person is university student, already so many bad habits, you know, and impressions are established. But child, that's where we have to start. And I was impressed hearing this from the mouth of a 26-year-old brahmachari, having that vision, right? Yes, yeah, wow. I don't think you would hear that anywhere else, you know, yeah. Yeah, so these things, you know, woke me up to this topic of children. And yeah, it's really like that, that in a culture where sense gratification is the goal in life, children don't have a place. Yeah, they're pushed aside. They're seen as a burden, a disturbance, even an impediment, an obstacle. Yes. And by the way, with the elderly people, it's the same thing. You know, in a culture where sense gratification is the all in all, elderly people are pushed aside, off in the nursing home, out of the way. They are a burden in our pursuits of enjoying life. Right? Yes. But in a culture where self-realization is the goal, there's a whole different attitude there. There the children are the center. They are the future. Yes. And the elderly people, they are served with in honor, with respect. They're very important members of the community. They're giving the guidance, they're passing on the values, the standards, and, you know, yeah. So, and yeah, this conditioning of materialistic culture is quite deep and subtle. Not so easy to shake this off. That's the whole point, you know. And that's why, you know, very often our children are pushed aside, you know. This is what I often observe when I travel, that in some temples nobody wants to conduct a children's program on the weekend because everybody wants to be in the temple room enjoying the Sunday program and. Nobody wants to do it, yes. Or on festivals, Janmashtami and. You know, ideally there should be a kids program parallel and not just a kids program in the mood of a babysitting sitter program, getting the kids out of the way and keeping them quiet so we can have our fun, you know. Yeah, the kids can feel that, you know, that the heart and soul of those who run the kids' program is not really in the program, but they rather wish to be somewhere else, you know. Yeah, so all these things, you know, are quite important aspects there that I dare say, I mean, Gavadan Samskara obviously is a good point to start, but it's not everything. As long as we don't transform our attitude towards children, we will not really be able to keep them, you know, enthused, enlivened in Krishna consciousness. It's the attitude, you know. Yes, that's what I experienced in Bangladesh. It's not that they have such a sophisticated kids' programs there. Well, they do. Every temple has this department, let me think, how do they call it? Jagrata Chhatra Samaj. Anybody who speaks Bengali here? No. Yeah, that's the name of the kids program. So every temple has a solid kids department, definitely, where the kids are trained from smallest age on. You know? Yes, but it's not the sophisticated mood of the kids programs, but no, it's the attitude. You know, yes, because Bangladesh, there the spiritual culture is still very strong, and the kids are in the center. And everybody interacts with them, you know, or the men, they make friends with the kids, they act as role models for the kids, so that the boys, especially the boys, of course, you know, and the ladies for the girls, so that the boys think, yes, I want to become one day like this Brahmachari, right? Yes, you know, but if we ignore the kids, then how would they ever want to become a Brahmachari, you know? So there, that consciousness is there, you know, there people see the children as the future Brahmacharis, as the future, you know, strong ladies there, and you know, and they, yeah, they include them, involve them, they make friends, they encourage them, and you know, yeah, whole different mindset there, you know. Yeah, and I mean, even when it comes to married life, very often I come across this, that there is, unfortunately, still a little bit of immaturity there in our organization, that we think having children is an impediment, an obstacle in our devotional life. You know, yes, it's quite common. I don't know, maybe not here or something, but in other parts of the world it is, that often people say, young couples say, yeah, we get married, but we don't want children, we want to travel and preach. So usually my answer is, hey, that's the wrong ashram. That's the next ashram you're talking about. That's the vanaprastha ashram. Yes. But people often have that understanding that having children means it's an obstacle in devotional life. But actually, it's the opposite. If we take this role of planting the seed of bhakti in the child's heart, if we take this seriously, starting off with Gaudiya and Samskara, puts a whole different dimension to married life, actually. Yeah. Yeah. It's truly like that. I see it all the time. When it helps, you know, when the parents are serious, it helps them immensely to shape up, to become exemplary, you know. Yes, yes, yes. To become selfless, not only for the ladies, also for the men, you know. Yes, because when there's another little entity there, well, you have to put yourself a little aside, you know, and you can't just only what I want and what I like and what's convenient for me. But no, there's another little Vaishnava there, and you have to care, you have to serve, and you know, yes. I hope it's not out of place, but I do want to share a quite amazing statement. Not from Prabhupada, but from one of the former presidents of the U.S. I find sometimes when non-devotees make some statements which are to the point, you know, this can be even more inspiring than when it comes from our books, when we see, or just see, even non-devotees get the point. So this is from the President Herbert Hoover. He was president 1929 to 1933. So this is almost 100 years ago, you know. So I'm sure you would not hear such statement today. So he said, yeah, please listen to this. If we could have but one generation of properly born, trained, educated, and healthy children, a thousand other problems of government would vanish. We would assure ourselves of healthier minds and vigorous bodies to direct the energies of our nation to greater heights of achievement. So I think we should accept this as a vision statement for ISKCON. You know, we can Krishnaize it. We can say, if we could, I mean, first of all, interestingly that he says, properly born, you know? So we don't know what he understands under that, but at least he has some concept of, you know, the importance of being properly born. You know, that's already quite remarkable. Well, 100 years ago, there was more God consciousness around, you know? Yes. So yeah, if we could have but one generation of properly born, trained, educated, and healthy children, a thousand other problems of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement would vanish. We would assure ourselves of healthier minds and vigorous bodies to direct the energies of Prabhupada's mission to greater heights of achievement. Wow, you know, yeah. Because especially for us understanding that the children who take birth in our families, they do continue from previous life, you know. So actually, if you really think about it, it's quite an amazing way of making devotees, you know, because they continue from previous lives, yes, rather than always thinking outreach, outreach, outreach. Of course, this is also important, but yeah, the children, you know, that's where it's at, you know, and it's like a long-term investment type thing, you know, like planting a sandalwood tree. The harvest comes quite after some years, not immediately. So that's what it's like with the kids, you know, and I'm sure here you have that experience also because you have several generations here living and so on. So yeah, if we just give the kids the utmost attention, really moving them in the center and transforming our attitude, not seeing them as a disturbance and obstacle and hindrance and all that, you know. Yeah, so that would certainly be a good contribution, you know. Yes, and I mean, yeah, in regards to Gavadan Samskar, let me also share this little thing. When I was just now in Mayapur, just a few weeks ago, I met this one family from South India, and they are very strictly practicing, really creating this culture of bhakti in their home, and of course, Gavadan Samskara was a clear thing in their lives and so on. And their boy is 3 years now, and I have never seen such an alert, awake, conscious kid of 3 years of age. Amazing, you know, amazing, really. Like, without any training or anything, when, you know, he imitates the arm position of the Panchatattva. So if the parents say, oh, Mahaprabhu, he goes like that, Nityananda, you know, and Shrivas, you know, he knows it all. So observant for a three-year-old kid. My God, you know, it's not that the parents trained him or do like this. No, he just watches it all and does it all, you know. And not only that, he observes how each pujari waves the chamara in the aarti. He imitates it all. Oh, he's doing like that. He's doing like this, you know. And not only that, then how every more prominent senior devotee wears their chadas, their sannyas cloth. He knows it all. Sachinanda Swami like this, and this person like that. I mean, my God, you know, 3 years of age. So, I mean, it does make a difference, you know, what soul we invite to take birth in our family. It's not a coincidence, of course, we all know this, but when you see such examples, wow, you know, you are struck, you know. Or then another time, I met one family in South India. They shared that the mother, during her pregnancy, she chanted every day the 5th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, just the Sanskrit loud, every day for 9 months. And their kid was at that time 5. And without any further training, when the parents were chanting this chapter, stopping at any verse, the kid knew the next verse. Wow. I mean, I was blown away. You know, of course, we all know Prahlad Maharaj heard in the womb, and. Of course, Prahlad Maharaj would. Why wouldn't he, right? But that this takes still place today. Wow, who would have thought of that, you know? Amazing, yes. So there are so many, you know, subtle and deep secrets there in raising children, and there's a lot of room to improve, you know, yes. I do want to, I'm kind of getting carried away here. I wanted to share a few quotes here, further quotes on Garbhadhan Samskar, because there are so many references in the Bhagavatam on this, you know, and often they're splayed out through the whole Bhagavatam, so we don't always capture them all. So that's what I do in my courses. I gather it all together, give it structure, systematic journey there, and try to, illustrate it with examples and, you know. Yeah, so there is one interesting purport where Prabhupada actually explains why in Kali Yuga everybody is considered less than sudras, right? We all know that, but yeah, I wasn't so clear in it until I came across this quote. So this is 4th canto, 14th chapter, verse 42. The Prabhupada explains, the pious seminal succession in the twice-born families of the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas especially, as well as in the families of Vaishyas also, must be kept very pure by the observation of the purificatory process, beginning with Garbhadhan Samskara, which is observed before conceiving a child. Unless this purificatory process is strictly observed, especially by the Brahmanas, the family descendants become impure, and gradually sinful activities become visible in the family. Maharaj Anga was very pure because of the purification of semen in the family of Maharaj Dhruva. However, his semen became contaminated in association with his wife Sunita, who happened to be the daughter of death personified. Because of this polluted semen, King Vena was produced. You know? So Prabhupada very nicely explains how it is a whole process of keeping the semen pure so that there's no room for sinful activities to enter. So, and because this, of course, is not observed in Kali Yuga, you know, even within ISKCON, we are not quite there yet, that this is really the standard and the knowledge is there and people actually practice it and, you know. But yeah, I mean, why would Prabhupada undergo so much effort there and explain it all, you know? Or there's another nice purple, 5520. The heart is situated within the chest, and although instrumentally the son is born with the aid of the genitals, he is actually born from within the heart. According to the heart situation, the semen takes the form of a body. Therefore, according to the Vedic system, when one begets a child, his heart should be purified through the ritualistic ceremony known as Garbhadan. Rishabhdev's heart was always uncontaminated and spiritual. Consequently, all the sons born from the heart of Rishabhdev were spiritually inclined. Yes. And I mean, there's so many more, but yeah, time is kind of up. But let me just make a couple more quick little comments, because I'm not sure how much we kind of know what Garbhadan samskara actually is. So of course, Prabhupada extracted the principles in a very unique way by telling us we should chant 50 rounds on the day of conception. So this, of course, you will not find in the Bhagavatam anywhere. You know, this is Prabhupada's adjustment for Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. Prabhupada was very expert in these things. So 50 rounds. But this is not everything, actually. There's so much more we can do. You know, it starts with getting rid of some toxins in the body, highly recommended. And then for quite some time, it's a very individual thing. You know, it can be 1 month, 2 months, 6 months, 12 months, whatever. You know, that we try and do something a little extra. We show, we demonstrate to Krishna that we are serious, that we really want to receive a special soul in our family, and that we chant extra rounds, we read extra, we chant some prayers, whatever inspires us. And we can even meditate on certain qualities which we would like to see in the child we invite. You know, yes, we can make it very personal, you know, that we meditate. Oh, please, Krishna, send us a wonderful devotee who will continue the puja here in Alachua, or a wonderful devotee who will preach the glories of the holy name all around the world. Oh, a wonderful devotee who will distribute tons of Prabhupada's books, or whatever. You know, of course, good if husband and wife pray for the same thing. Otherwise, Krishna may be a little a little bit in hesitation whose prayers here to fulfill. Yeah, so it's a whole meditation, a whole prayerful preparation, this Garbhadan samskara, you know, yes. And last point, just very quickly. I dare say this topic could even be used as a topic for outreach. Yeah, because as we all know, there are people out there who are striving for a more sattvic lifestyle, who are vegetarian, who are vegan, who are into yoga and meditation, who already know about Ayurveda. You know, we often use Ayurveda as an outreach topic, or yoga. So why not Garbhadan samskara? The whole science, how to invite a special soul to take birth in our family, you know. I mean, people are concerned about breeding horses and dogs and cats, you know, but they have no clue that we also can breed human beings, you know, that it's not a coincidence. I mean, I dare say this could attract some people's attention, you know. Yeah, there may be a market for this, you know, yes. And I know one couple in South India, they have developed a whole thing. They have developed an app for pregnant mothers to see what's happening at which month of the year, which month of the pregnancy, and a whole preparational journey, the accompanying people, devotees, non-devotees. Of course, this is also South India, there people may be more open to it. But I dare say in the Western world, it could also be a topic to try, you know, to actually reach out to people. So yeah, 9 o'clock, my time is up, sorry. Do we want to ask for one or two quick questions or, yes? Okay.
Oh, thank you, Mother Devaki, for this in-depth expanding on the process of Garbhadhan. So important, and on children, our attitude. You did say, well, two things. First of all, I want to say I have often, very often, encountered people on book distribution who are, like you say, into yoga or, you know, they're more enlightened and evolved. And I would tell them, when introducing the chanting of the holy name for the first time to them, and I see they don't have children and they're married, that's when I tell them about that.
Oh,
that, that you can invite a very elevated soul in your family and make your soul, make your family, your home very peaceful, much more peaceful.
Amazing.
But you say that, and I've heard it said, and Prabhupada perhaps, I believe, said that it'll take several generations to get a higher quality of population if we're doing this.
Well,
but time deteriorates things. So how is that?
Well, I mean, what I was saying, it takes several generations. I didn't even only mean this Garbhadhan samskara. But I meant actually more in general for us to really get there, to apply and live what Prabhupada is giving us in his books. You know, I see it a little broader, that not only in Garbhadhan Samskara in regards to that, but in regards to all different other things he's also giving us, you know. So, like even my latest book, if I may bring your attention to it, Vanaprasthashram, not Varnashram, but Vanaprasthashram. I call it the forgotten ashram, right? And I make this joke in the introduction. Prabhupada was always saying 50, you know, when we are 50. So now ISKCON is 50. It's time for understanding the importance of Vanaprasthashram. You know, even though the Bhagavatam is full of very clear, strong statements. By the way, on Saturday in the house program, I will give a presentation on Vanaprasthashram, which I also gave at the ILS this year in Mayapur. They invited me to give a presentation on that topic. So yeah, you know, just as an example. So, you know, when we read all these statements, we can ask ourselves, my God, how could we miss it for so many years? You know, it's all there. But yeah, it takes quite a few generations until we get there to actually practice, you know, all these aspects which Prabhupada very clearly gives us in his books, you know. And yeah, I mean, we know the Kali Yuga is advancing, but still, well, I guess we also know there is the golden age predicted within Kali Yuga. So yeah, I mean, we better, you know, get it together to really try wholeheartedly to actually live and pass on and so on, you know. Yes. Yes.
I was very interested to hear about your cultural classes or seminars. And at the beginning of your class, you did give sort of a brief synopsis of your life and this topic. So my question is this. You mentioned how Prabhupada gave us instruction about how we can purify our lives. And so much of this purification is, it's like a self-help program, how to become purified of envy, which is a big problem.
The topic for tomorrow evening.
So what are you introducing or speaking about culturally that is any different from the program that Prabhupada is already sort of instructing us? I'm interested to hear your expansion on it.
Well, you know, let us understand how culture comes about. Culture comes about by living a certain worldview, a certain ideology, a certain philosophy, by actually living it. That's how culture develops. And, well, 269 in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, what is day to the common person is night to the introspective sage. And what is day to the saintly person is night to everyone. So these two cultures, they are like day and night because they're based on completely opposite worldviews, right? Material life is all about sense gratification being the top thing, you know, boosting, feeding false ego, pushing ourselves to the front, and making a show, showing off is the path to success. That's material life. So, according to that worldview, the culture develops. Whereas spiritual culture is based on the opposite worldview, that we are minimizing sense gratification. You know, we're trying to, spiritual culture is based on cultivating Trinada Pisunichina. That's basically the essence of spiritual culture. So they're completely opposite. Completely opposite, you know? Yes. So, yeah, I mean, it's not that I'm trying to introduce something which Prabhupada did not give. No, he gave it all. But as I'm saying, it takes a while to get there, to actually practically live it. That's the point. And we are surrounded by materialistic culture, by the opposite propaganda. Completely. And we don't even realize how deep and subtle that conditioning is. Yeah, it's so deep, so subtle. We think we do what we decide to do, but we are actually a product of our surroundings. Yes, we are. We don't even realize. You know, it's so subtle, so subtle. And as I mentioned in the beginning, bhakti is all about transforming. You know, we don't want to stay as we are. We actually want to transform our likes and dislikes, our habits, our worldviews, and patterns of behaviors and everything. So that's takes quite some time, you know. Yes. And I guess, as far as I have heard, Prabhupada did encourage the devotees to spend some time in India. Why? To imbibe the culture. But now, India, 50 years later, whew, you know, it's almost sometimes more intensely materialistic than in Europe or something, you know. So, and when we go to India, usually we are amongst our group of people from the same country. We don't mix much with the locals, you know? Yes. Therefore, we may not actually, and that was different 50 years ago, you know? Yeah, the whole mood in India 50 years ago was completely different. And their devotees were also mixing more, you know? And so on, you know? So, yeah, and simply, somehow by Krishna's arrangement, I ended up getting involved in Bangladesh there, you know, and I had that good fortune to, actually receive a whole transformation there over 20 years. And I still haven't finished, you know, so every time I learn there on all subtle things, oh my God, you know, yes, like the topic of respect, you know. Oof. You know, we are far away from actually even understanding what it means. respect, you know. And all these subtle etiquettes and so on, I learned so much there in Bangladesh, you know, from the devotees there. And it's not that sometimes people, when they hear Bangladesh, they think, well, we are in America here, we don't want to become Bangladeshis or something. But now we can, you know, learn so many things which we are actually meant to live in our Vaishnav life. You know, yes, we chant the Shikshasikam in many temples every day, Chinara Pisunichina, and, you know. So I don't want any followers. And just the other day, one very senior devotee asked me, so how many followers do you have? And because, I mean, believe it or not, I live without a phone. I travel the whole world without a phone. I don't want to invite this into my life. I have a laptop, of course, and I spend a lot of time at the laptop. But no, it's in my room there, you know. It's not in my pocket making all beeping noises there and all this. You know, so, yeah. How did I get to this now? The followers. You know, so because I don't have a presence on social media. Not much, I'm something tiny little bit. You may as well forget it. I don't even have a maintained YouTube channel, you know. No. So when he asked me, how many followers do you have? I didn't even click what he meant. And I said, followers? What do you mean? I'm not into followers. I don't know. That was my answer. And then afterwards I realized, oh, he probably meant followers on YouTube and Facebook and all that. Yeah, I'm not out there, you know, because I don't consider myself advanced enough not to get affected by this. Because in the name of preaching, we can feed and boost our false egos. I have a whole book on the false ego, our constant companion and troublemaker. Yes. Oh, wow. I've had a lot of good feedback from this. And it helped me a lot to detect how my false ego gets into my way every day, and I don't even notice it. Yes. Big topic. Because material life in its culture is all about boosting and feeding the false ego. Spiritual life, it's all about dissolving and subduing it. Otherwise, we can't even make it back to Godhead. You know, so, wow. 180 degrees opposite, you know. So Prabhupada says it all, he gives it all, you know. But yeah, it takes a while to actually really get it and try to apply it and learn all these subtle rules of Vaishnava etiquette and culture, which are designed to help us to dissolve the false ego, you know. Yeah, but often we don't even know them. We don't. You know? It's getting late.
I had a trick question.
No provocative trick questions.
No, it's not provocative.
I think it's time to finish. we can personally connect, you know. So yeah, one more time, I want to bring your attention to these books here. If you want to have a quick look. And tomorrow evening, we'll have a house program somewhere, don't ask me where, on the topic of envy. Saturday, on the topic of Vanaprastha Ashram, and Monday, on the topic of false ego. And Sunday program, Power of Consciousness. Okay, thank you so much for your kind attention, and please forgive me if I was carrying on too long here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki.